Why pay more for a separate CoQ10 supplement? Enjoy twice the benefits with SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced. From the number one doctor, pharmacist, and cardiologist recommended beet brand for heart health support, the new SuperBeats Heart Chews Advanced by Human is now infused with CoQ10. That's essentially like getting CoQ10 for free. Our powerful blend of beetroot, grapeseed extract, and CoQ10 ingredients support nitric oxide production, healthy blood pressure, healthy CoQ10 levels, and heart-healthy energy with two tasty chews a day. Plus, SuperBeats Heart Chews Advance are plant-based, so you get heart-healthy energy without stimulants. For a limited time, get a free 30-day supply of SuperBeats Heart Chews on all bundles and 15% off your first order by going to RadioBeats.com and using promo code DEAL. That's RadioBeats.com, code DEAL.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
The Mayans. Who were they? Where did they come from? Why did they disappear? Their kingdom spanned all throughout Mexico, Central America, and South America. Today we find out more who they were with a returning guest, Brian Forrester, researcher, author. We touch on some of his books. Lost Ancient Technology of Mexico, a captivating guide to the earliest known major ancient civilization in Mexico, and lots more. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome back to Truth Be Told, the one and only Brian Forrester. Brian, how you doing?
Tony, always a pleasure.
It is a pleasure. You're one of our favorite guests because you've been with us, I think, since the beginning. So we appreciate that. And I have to say, when I reached out to you, it was actually for a selfish reason. I am going to Cancun for over Christmas and New Year's. And I thought, you know what, while I'm there, I might as well shoot some footage and maybe get a few interviews while I'm there. Not about Cancun, but about the Mayan temples and the Mayan pyramids and Chichen Itza and all this fabulous stuff down there. And then I reached out to you and I said, do you know anybody that is experienced in this ancient civilization? And you said, yeah, of course. You sent me your book. And I said, well, then you need to come on the show. And you said, yes. And that's why we're here today. All right. So,
okay, great.
So let me ask you this. We mostly hear about Machu Picchu and Peru, and that's mostly where we talk about and hear about. So why is it that we don't hear about Mexico's pyramids as much as Machu Picchu? Why is that?
Oh, probably promotion. I mean,
more tourism.
Machu Picchu is overly hyped at this point, but Mexico is fabulous in terms of its ancient history and diversity of cultures and ancient structures. And what most people don't realize is that there was a megalithic presence in Mexico at many of the famous and not so famous locations. So that's true also at Chichen Itza. There are two small temple-like pyramids that are made of massive blocks of stone. Mm-hmm. And they appear to be much, much older than all the other work there.
So, yeah. And what is the significance of Chichen Itza? We hear mostly about that then, because there's other ruins around that area. And I'm actually even going to have 1 day layover in Mexico City, and we're going to go visit the temple there or the pyramid there. But what's the significance about Chichen Itza?
Well, it was Chichen Itza was a very massive construction. I think El Castillo is the main pyramidal structure there that's quite famous. What mm-hmm. most people don't know is that it was built on top of, I think, two other smaller pyramids, and you used to be able to actually go inside because there is a door at the bottom left-hand side.
Oh, there is.
With a gate, yeah. And unfortunately, now it's locked. But the first time I went there, we were actually able to go inside of that pyramidal structure, which was absolutely amazing. And our guide we had was a local Mayan person, and he knew a lot about resonance and light and that kind of thing. So he gave us that perspective rather than the dry kind of archaeological story. So that was quite fascinating. That started my interest in ancient Mexico, which persists to this day.
And when was this particular temple or pyramid built compared to others? Was it earlier or was it about the same?
I'm trying to remember when the classic Maya time period was. I think around 700 BC or something like mm-hmm. that. It's after the Olmec and before the Aztec and Teotihuacan cultures. Probably really easy to look that up on
right.
on the internet in terms of when exactly they believe it was constructed. But Chichen Itza was built over the course of hundreds of years. I think El Castillo, or the castle, was one of the last of the constructions. There is an ancient observatory there, which is a round tower. You have to go down through the jungle to find it, but it's well worth looking at. It'll take you hours, to properly see Chichen Itza.
Oh yeah, I've heard it's pretty much an all day thing. I mean, there's other things that we're going to see, but what is some of the features or physical attributes that you notice that may be a little different from other pyramids in the same region? Is there any?
Well, the classic Maya period, most of the construction was the same kind of construction technique. You have relatively small stones with mortar used to cement them together. Mm-hmm. But that in contrast to the earlier megalithic stuff, which is like very much larger blocks, not on the scale of something like Egypt, but still you can,
right.
It doesn't take much time to be able to tell that there were at least two major different construction times at that and other locations. And that whole Yucatan area is full of ancient Mayan sites, Chichen Itza being the most famous, but Tulum is nearby.
Yes.
And just lots and lots of places you can go see.
Yeah, unfortunately, we're not going to have time to do Tulum because we have other sites we're going to go see. But I've heard there's tons. And were they only sacred sites I hate to say religious purposes, but what was the significance of building this, versus, Egypt's and then also in Peru? Is there a significance to the building of this?
It was a major cultural, any of these places was a major cultural center.
Right.
So it was a place of trade and commerce and pilgrimage for spiritual purposes. And things of that nature. They also know that a lot of these were connected by ancient road systems, which of course don't exist now, but well connected. I think Chichen Itza was one of the latter major places that the Maya constructed.
Yeah, I saw that they said that they were a lot of connected by roads. I found that fascinating. It made it seem a little more advanced than when you just think about, oh, there's pyramids and, it's ancient civilizations. You don't think about the road system that they built.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, I guess a lot of academics would say that these places were isolated from other major centers. But the more that more study that's being done, the more that they can see that these civilizations were much more advanced in terms of social structure than what some believe.
And what did you find going there yourself the most fascinating? Did the kind of hieroglyphs of ancient gods. What was the most that kind of stood out to you the most? Was it the hieroglyphs? Was it the structure itself? Was it the way they built it?
It was more just the sense of scale. There's a a very large ball court there that again looks like it had earlier megalithic construction work done, and then the Maya found it and built on top and around that. I know very little about the symbolism of ancient Mexico. I'm more interested in how buildings are built,
right?
To see, to see, were the Maya capable of that kind of work, which of course they were. But with the megalithic aspects, as I said, that would predate any Maya presence.
And was there a significance of how many ball courts there were? Because I know there's quite a few.
I saw one major ball court there. And in general, most of these locations will have at least one major ball court. If you're going to be in Mexico City, you should go see Teotihuacan.
Yeah, talk about that. I've never really heard much about that. Like I said, we mostly stick to Egypt and all this. Tell us about that pyramid.
Well, it's another major complex. The two pyramids that are prominent there are the so-called Temple of the Sun and Temple of the Moon. And then there's the Avenue of the Dead, which is a walkway that goes about a mile. And then you reach what's called the Temple of Quetzalcoatl. And Quetzalcoatl was the feathered serpent god. And that again shows some evidence of much older megalithic construction, because you have these massive stone blocks incorporated into the foundation, and then much rougher work done on top. Nobody actually knows who originally built Teotihuacan.
No, they don't.
Thankfully, the academics will admit that. They know that the Aztec, on their way from their homeland to reach what is modern day Mexico City, that they stopped at Teotihuacan and were amazed at what they saw, but they were not the builders.
Oh, they were not the builders. Wow.
No,
that's fascinating.
No, the Aztec clearly. Yeah.
Fascinating. That's almost like, well, I guess after Egypt, there was no one that actually just took over and claimed it for themselves that I know of. Wow, that's amazing, and it's huge. Like I'll show a picture. This one is, and some of these you're gonna have to pronounce some of these names, because I'm not. Is this this was one right outside of Mexico City? I'm sure.
Yeah, that's Teotihuacan.
Yeah, and what I noticed, this one is built like a pyramid, but it doesn't have a peak. I know in Egypt there's a lot of peaks. What's the why is it significant of the peak versus more of a flat top in Mexico? Is there at all?
What's that?
No, so like I said, when in Mexico, if you see a lot of their pyramids are more flat versus Egypt peaks. Oh, I think we're having a internet there real quick. You there? Oh, we lost him.
Yep.
Oh, there we go. There we go.
Sorry about that.
That's okay. It happens. You know, internet, that's what the good and bad. So mm-hmm. I don't know if you heard. So like I said, even behind me, you can see it's more of a flat Mexico City, more of rounded flat. But in Egypt, a lot of its peaks, they have like a point.
Yeah.
Is there a significance to that versus Egypt?
Well, I think the main differentiation you have to make is that as far as I'm concerned, the true pyramids are those located in Egypt.
Right.
The ones that are four-sided, 53-degree angle and come to a peak like that, because they show definite signs that they were some kind of energetic structure. They weren't simply a burial place or, whatever Egyptologists say.
Right.
But then in other parts of the world, like in like in Mexico and other parts of Central America, you have, I would call them pyramidal structures rather than pyramids, because we get the word pyramid from the Greek, which is pyromidos, which means the fire in the middle or the fire within. And that was their translation of the original Egyptian, which was perneter, which means the house of energy. So, so the pyramids in Egypt appear to have originally been very pragmatic, energetic structures of some kind, whereas the other pyramidal forms we find around the world, I think, were built for ceremonial purposes. It was a way to connect the, you know, the earth with the sky, or the gods with the people, kind of thing. And the finest construction work is that done in Egypt. The Pyramid of the Sun at Teotihuacan is massive in scale, perfectly bilaterally symmetrical. So how they were able to build that structure is quite puzzling, just because of its size. And then they've recently discovered underground pools of mercury at that location as well. What the mercury was for and where it came from is also a mystery.
I was going to say, how big is the size of the mercury? That's fascinating.
Well, supposedly, yeah, I think it's under the Temple of Quetzalcoatl, and it's something like an acre size pool. That's a lot of mercury.
That's a lot of mercury. I'm surprised. I mean, because the toxic and poison, I'm surprised it hasn't affected everything around there.
No, that's true. And it's processed from cinnabar,
right?
Which is like a powder. And I think I think they believe the cinnabar came from somewhere else in Mexico. It's not from that location. So the processing of cinnabar to mercury requires a lot of heat, and it's incredibly toxic. So how they could have even did that process is very much a mystery.
That is that. Wow. I did not know that. That's, well, no, I know not to get too close to that. I think it's fascinating. The differences between, like I said, the pyramids, but why do you think, and I think we've asked this question a million times, and I'm sure people have, is the significance of the pyramid itself, because there is so much similarities between Egypt and South America and Central America of the pyramids itself. It's so similar, it's hard to believe that they didn't have an influence on each other. How do you think that happened?
No, that's a good question. It is kind of hard to believe that such diverse, different cultures at extreme distant locations would come up with the same concept of building something like that. But again, I think it's a question of as above, so below, like connecting the earth with the heavens. It would be the central theme to it.
Right.
So starting with smaller structures, like in Egypt too, of course, you have the mastabas, and then you have the big pyramids, even though the mastabas were made later. The Great Pyramid system are the original constructions in Egypt. But generally what you find in Mexico is you find relatively primitive work, like by the Olmec. They would make hills of earth.
Right.
And nothing very very sophisticated. It's even questionable to this day whether those massive 10-ton granite heads were made by the Olmec at all, or whether they were discovered by them, because quite a few of them were found buried underground, or at least just the surface of the top of the head being exposed.
Right.
So, it's a very mysterious country, and like many others, like Peru and Bolivia and Egypt and Lebanon, there's a lot more to the history than what most academics understand, and that's why it's good to physically go there yourself and look at all the subtleties and differences that are quite evident.
Well, like you said, you don't know if they discovered these heads. Why didn't they? Can't they have people like Scott Walter, who's a forensic geologist, go and test the differences between ages of the stone itself and see if there's a connection, or if it was in the civilization before this one?
Well, you kind of have to look, you know, it's good to have a geologist with you because you have to look at what type of stone is used mm-hmm. and then what tools would be available to shape that stone. In terms of most of the Mesoamerican people, they were, you know, they had obsidian technology in that they, you know, they made spears and things and hammers and other objects out of obsidian, which is volcanic glass, which is a very delicate material. If you try to hit something hard with it,
right,
it'll shatter. So basalt is quite a bit harder. So how, you know, how a culture with obsidian level technology, no metals, was able to shape a 10-ton basalt head is very puzzling. There's also in Mexico City at the giant anthropology museum, there's a, I think, 100-ton sculpture outside of the rain god called Tlaloc, and it looks like it has drill holes in it. So
what is it again?
Sorry?
What was it again?
It's called Tlaloc. It's about 100-ton sculpture located right outside the anthropology museum.
I have to check that one out too. Real quick in the chat room, John was saying, I think you guys should do research, come to Alabama and do research into the pyramids of the area around here in relations to the giants. I didn't even know that there were actually pyramids in America, but in fact there were some pyramids, because didn't the Incas and Mayans, didn't they come up into America at all, a little bit?
Well, not the Inca, maybe the Maya or the Aztec may have, because they're in much closer proximity.
Right.
But of course, you know, in areas like Ohio, and you have all these, you know, you have the work of the mound builders, you have Cahokia, which was a huge construction that would have required thousands upon thousands of people to build. So there are definitely some mysteries in the continental U.S. that aren't really being looked at too much.
So
by academics.
Yeah, so the influence of the Mayans probably came into America. I'm sure they had some type of influence on the Native Americans and stuff like that, for sure.
There would definitely be major trading systems.
Yeah.
So objects of trade, you know, even obsidian moving up from Mexico into the continental U.S. and other trade goods going down. You know, they had very sophisticated trading networks before the time of the European arrival, you know, from the west coast of the U.S. to the east coast,
right,
you know, from the north to the south, et cetera, et cetera.
You know, what I found fascinating is, you know, I'm sure when you grew up and when I was growing up, in history class, Native Americans were savages. You know, they, you know, lived in tents and they hunted buffalo, which, you know, I'm sure they did. But the older we've become, and I know you're around 35 now, but even where I'm from in Kansas, I grew up in a very small town, 200 people town in Kansas called Granola. About 45 miles from where I grew up is Ark City, like Ark, Kansas City. It, you know, it's right on the border of Oklahoma. They discovered a city, a Native American city, where they said they had, and this was just recent, in the last few years. I had a guy on not too long ago from Wichita State. He was an archaeologist. Where they said up to 25 to 30,000 people lived in this city. This is what I find fascinating, that we're constantly discovering a history that has been lost, and thank God that we're discovering this. And I'm sure with like the Mayans, the Incas, any other civilization out there, that, you know, things that we thought about in history books and movies, that is getting readjusted to the truth of what was really there. And have you found that with down in Peru, you know, things that are being discovered all the time, that's proving that they, like you said, they weren't just primitive like we think they were?
Oh, definitely. I mean, the Inca at the just before the arrival of the Spanish, the Inca civilization was a population of 15 million people, from Ecuador all the way down to the middle of
15
Chile
million.
And
wow.
15 million. Yeah. They weren't all the Inca. The Inca were actually the royal family, but the Inca were in, not really control of, but the total Inca civilization was made up of a bunch of different cultures, but a population of about 15 million.
Wow.
There's also a great book called 1491 that you can get. And that's a book, that's a very historical, factual book about the cultures of the Americas, estimated that when Columbus arrived, there were at least 50 million people in Central, North, and South America.
Right.
Of course, they all got more or less wiped out to some great extent because of introduction of disease, but very sophisticated social networks between these different cultures. Supposedly, when the first European ships were approaching the eastern seaboard of the U.S., it was bright with light because they had all of these fires that were burning at night, meaning that you had a very large population on the eastern seaboard at that time.
Hmm.
So rather than people living in mud huts or teepees or whatever, the actual story is much more complex than what we were taught in school.
Yeah, I find that fascinating. I love when I hear new discoveries like that. You know, even we're hearing all over the world, but I think in the last year and a half, they've discovered two new types of human species that I know of that were in the news. And I love that we're constantly in this world. You know, the world keeps getting smaller as internet and, you know, is connecting us. And as we get older in technology, it just seems to get smaller, smaller, smaller. But yet we're discovering new things all the time that change, and it does change history. You know, a lot of people don't want to embrace it, but it's, you know, that is the truth.
Oh, very much so. And luckily, there are so many independent investigators now, thanks to air travel and,
right.
you know, being able to access all of these different places that we don't have to depend upon academics to get the knowledge. You can go there yourself.
Right.
And there are two friends of mine that are in Egypt right now, actually on a tour, and they're having the time of their lives because of this, you know, this complex problem we're having globally at the moment.
Right.
That they're able to get access to all sorts of sites in Egypt, which you know, without basically almost anybody there.
Well, I think just recently in Egypt, this was a big discovery of I think it was multiple tombs, or at least mummies that were discovered. Wasn't that? Didn't you hear about that? Did you hear about that?
Yeah, that's around Saqqara.
Yeah,
they've found lots.
Yeah, and has that? I know, and I'm going to talk about NASCAR Lions here in a second because I know they found something new with that, I believe. But have they found any new type of discoveries in Peru area that recently that were excited about? Because I know there's a lot of stuff that's been discovered down there.
Not recently. I mean, they keep doing more excavations at places like Machu Picchu, and they're finding more terracing systems in the jungle. The Peruvian government has put a huge amount of money into the archaeological sites. Even places that get 10 people a day are in pristine, renovated condition now. So very proud of the Peruvian government. And in Egypt, the great thing is that rather than restricting access, they're actually opening places up more and more as time goes on. So now you're able to actually go underneath the step pyramid at Saqqara, which before was prohibited. And there's a massive underground complex, which appears to be pre-dynastic, that's built into the bedrock there.
Fascinating. Truth be told, and we definitely have to ask this question, and I'm sure you've heard it many times, and ancient aliens, but like we touched on before, it's hard to believe that you know, in Egypt that they could create all the structure itself and moving rock hundreds of miles and the perfect lines and the cuts. It's kind of the same way with the Incas, Mayans, and all that. There's a lot of disbelief of how they created it. Do you, after all these years of down doing your research, do you still have a hard time believing that it was human built, or do you believe there might have been some help from the heavens?
Well, whoever it was had very advanced technology, in some cases more advanced than what we have. And that's what most academics still will not admit. But the more that we bring people down to look at these places and take them to Egypt, the more obvious it becomes that you had two levels of civilization. You have the cultures that we know of, like the dynastic Egyptians or the Inca, who were relatively capable of doing some very beautiful work. But then you have the structures that they could not possibly have done, which of course we've covered many, many times.
Right.
And it's like night and it's not like shades of gray. It's night and day.
Right.
The dynastic people were capable of working sandstone and limestone, but could not efficiently work granite or basalt. So whoever did that work had very advanced machining technology, and the evidence is there. You see the machine marks. You see drill holes all over the place, and some people say, well, maybe they're modern drill holes. It's like, no, some of these locations are a mile away from any possible place you could plug a cord into. So that's what makes these places still very fascinating to me, because it's obvious that we have not been told our full true history, whether it was off-planet people or an advanced human civilization. That's still up in the air, but whoever it was had technology more advanced than what we have now.
I mean, we're still trying to find that city of Atlantis that apparently had a lot of way advanced technology, and hopefully one day we'll discover that. It may be after our lifetimes, but it'll eventually come out. But well, let's talk about NASCAR lines real quick before we get out of here. Has there been any new lines discovered? I thought I heard there was. And then the other question I want to ask is, it with the way climate change, I'm going to say climate change, is it starting to affect the NASCAR lines itself, where it's in jeopardy of being wiped out?
No, actually, we're very fortunate in that the NASCAR lines are about a 3.5-hour drive from where I'm sitting right now to the south. And luckily, there's very little rainfall. I mean, here where I'm at Paracas, we get 1/2 inch of rain a year. I think NASCAR might get 1/2 inch of rain a year. So also, there tend to not be high winds in the area as well, even though the NASCAR plain is very flat. So we're very fortunate that most of the NASCAR system is still in very good shape. And thanks to the German archaeologist that spent 50 years studying it, she did a lot of work to renovate a lot of the NASCAR geoglyphs and lines. They are making more discoveries and have done, especially over the last, I think, 2 or 3 years, of many little geoglyph figures on the sides of mountains and sides of hills that are only visible now thanks to drone technology. So
right.
Thanks to quadcopters, they've been able to discover ones that they didn't know exist. And most of those predate the Nazca culture. They were in fact built by the earlier Paracas people who lived in the area with the famous elongated skulls.
Because a lot of people say, well, yeah, you can only see these from the sky. So is there mountains around the area, because I've never been, that you could see these lines from? Or is it really only like helicopters or planes or drones that you can only see these?
Well, the first archaeologist to see them was on top of one of the nearby mountains. And he looked down, and that's when the first major discovery was made. After that, it was pilots of the Peruvian Air Force that were flying over the area noticed them. Nazca is quite flat, but there are volcanic mountains in the area, so you can climb on top of them and look down and see them. They've also built a couple of towers now that you can climb up and look down on some of the more famous ones. But it's a huge system. It's something like the whole Nazca system is about 100 miles long. It's not in one little area. It covers quite a big landmass.
Was there any, since there are volcanic mountains around that area, was there any type of discovery, like maybe observatory or maybe were they observed for archaeological building of the lines itself, so they can actually navigate from the top of the mountain when they were actually building it? I mean, I don't know.
No, but actually the best theory actually is that what they did is that they made the design for the figure they wanted to do on a piece of animal skin or something like that, or maybe a piece of wood, and then built a big grid system on the ground, and then marked off on their drawing like a grid, and then simply expanded that on the ground, and then built a tower maybe 30 to 40 feet tall that could be taken apart, like three stages going up, and then they would be able to take it apart and move it and reconstruct it, so the architect could be on top of it guiding the workers. But it's quite a hostile environment.
It's not that it's
super hot, but it's so dry that getting hundreds if not thousands of people coordinated to do that kind of work would have been a major undertaking. And then there are all sorts of different theories as to what they were made for. So, of course, that's why I wrote a book about Nazca to explain the different theories.
Well, I mean, I find that fascinating. Like the old saying is, that's somebody with a lot of time on their hands. Because to put that much work and effort into building that, like, again, the significance of it and to figuring that out and just... they had to be somewhat of an advanced intelligence to, if it wasn't just human, but if maybe from the sky, but still that's amazing that they built what they did. Cause how many, there's hundreds, how many or thousands? I don't know. How many are there that they count so far?
What? Oh, Nazca figures?
Yes.
Well, there are three, I think there are about 30 major ones that are the big ones, like the hummingbird, et cetera.
Right. Right.
But there's an area in between Paracas, which is where I am, and Nazca called Palpa, and there are about 1,600 small ones.
Wow, that's amazing.
Built on tops of mountains, on the sides of mountains. And they're most of the ones they're discovering now are found in that area, not in Nazca proper.
Right. Well, this is why we appreciate people like you, because you get to go do this amazing work and get to see this up close and personal. You know, it's a lot of us like myself. This will be the first time I get to go to Mexico and tour a little bit myself and see some of these pyramids. And one of these days I'll get down to Peru. That's my goal and kind of a dream of mine to go down there. So hopefully I get to go see him with Brian Forrester.
Sure.
But Brian, thank you so much for being on Truth Be Told. So people can go to Amazon. They can go to your website, hiddeninkatours.com. Do you actually give tours, or do you, what are you doing nowadays to keep busy with the pandemic?
Well, luckily, Peru's has almost gone back to normal.
Oh, that's good.
I know there are major problems in the U.S., major problems in Canada, major problems in Europe. But Peru's almost fully reopened. International flights are coming back. Machu Picchu and all the major sites have reopened. Bolivia's doing even better. Bolivia's almost free of that pandemic thing. So
I know
we're doing much better down here.
I know Brazil got hit pretty hard. I don't know if they still are or not. But are you writing any new books or any updates on some of your books?
No, I'm starting to explore locally now that everything's opened up. So we're going to see some of the local ancient sites. I'll probably be going to Cusco this
No,
month,
great.
might be going to Bolivia next month, and then March I go to Egypt with a major tour.
Oh, fun.
And then we have three major tours in Peru and Bolivia, one in June, one August, one November. And between that and whatever else is going to show up, I'm just, I'm thankful to have had a bit of time off, but now it's time to get back out into the real world and
Right.
explore.
Ex and that's what we want you to do. Well, we appreciate you as always. Thank you for being on Truth Be Told again. And everybody, please support Brian. Hopefully we'll get back to the normal where Brian can get off to some of these conferences, hopefully in 2021, if not in 2022 for sure. And go see him. He's always brings amazing stories and his on his journey. So, all right. Thank you, Brian, so much. Appreciate you.
Always a pleasure, Tony. Thank you.
You got it. Thank you, everybody, for joining Truth Be Told. Once again, appreciate you for tuning in.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.
And subscribing to all of our sites. And please share the show. Leave great comments. Until next time, I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
When you drive a vehicle so reliable it's backed by a 10-year, 100,000-mile limited warranty, you stop thinking about what you can't do and start doing what you never thought possible. Visit your local Kia dealer today to see what you're capable of in a vehicle that inspires confidence around every corner. Kia. Movement that inspires.
Call 800-333-4KIA for details. Always drive safely. Limited inventory available. Warranties include 10-year, 100,000-mile powertrain and 5-year, 60,000-mile basic. Warranties are limited. See retailer for details.